Iti te samyakatmana samahita dio manaha upatastu rishikesham viven avanidra vayubhojanaha. So you can repeat. Tajjai unto that. Namaha. Our respectful obeisances. Astu. Let there be. Kastayai. Direction. Yatra. Wherein. Atma. The super soul. Bodhihi. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvaraha. The Supreme Controller. Yat. Which. Gatva. Approaching. Na. Never. Anivartante. Return. Shantaha. Peaceful. Sannyasinaha. Saintly persons in the renounced order of life. Amalaha. Pure. Iti. Thus. Te. They. Samyata atmanaha. Having controlled minds. Samahitaha. Steady. Niyaha. Intelligences. Amalaha. Purified. Upapastuhu. Worshipped. Rishikesham. The master of the senses. Vinidraha. Without sleeping. Vayobhojanaha. Eating only air. That's a breatharian. So translation. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto that direction where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated, where those purified souls in the renounced order of life, the great saintly persons go, and from which, having gone, they never return. Without sleep, fully controlling their minds and living only on only their breath, the predominating deities of the various planets began worshipping Rishikesha with this meditation. You can repeat. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto that direction where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated, where those purified souls in the renounced order of life, the great saintly persons, going from which, having gone, they never return. Without sleep, fully controlling their minds, and living on only their breath, the predominating deities of the various planets began worshiping Rishikesha with this meditation. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. The two words, tashai, kastayai, are very significant. Everywhere, in every direction, in every heart, and in every atom, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in His features as Brahman and Paramatma. Then, what is the purpose of saying, tashai, kastayai, in that direction where Hari is situated? During Hiranyakashipu's time, His influence was everywhere, but He could not force His influence into the places where the Supreme Personality of Godhead had His pastimes. For example, on this earth, there are such places as Vrindavana and Ayodhya, which are called Dhammas. In the Dhamma, there is no influence from Kali Yuga or any demon. If one takes shelter at such a Dhamma, worship of the Lord becomes very easy and resultant spiritual advancement quickly takes place. In fact, in India, one may still go to Vrindavana and similar places to achieve the results of spiritual activities quickly. So, let's see. We'll read the Sanskrit. Vajaya namostu kashtaya atratma haririshvara yadgatva narivartante shanta sanyasino malaha iti te samyatatmana samahito diyo malaha upatashto rishikesham vinindra vinidra, sorry. Vinidra vayu bhojanaha saomagana samirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Medita Yena Tosmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So it's interesting that they're not actually considering where Krishna is located to be anywhere in the material world. And the reason for this is, even though Paramatma is in every atom, Paramatma is in everyone's heart, he's still transcendentally situated. The example given is like one looks at the lake or a body of water when there's a reflection of the moon. And in one sense, the moon's presence is manifested within the body of water, within the heart. Not in the heart, of course, within the body of water. So, but in one another sense, the moon is not actually there. I mean, we say, you know, look at the moon on the water. But really, is the moon on the water? Is it coming in contact with the water? No, the moon shines, the energy of the moon. And the moon's presence is manifest on the water. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada explains that Paramatma is always transcendentally situated. In fact, the soul is always transcendentally situated, but it's an illusion right now. But neither the soul nor Paramatma actually come in contact with this illusory energy. They're bewildered by it. Someone wrote me a question the other day, you know, how is it the soul is bewildered by the material energy? Does he actually come in contact with it? And then I gave the example of the soul watching a movie, you know, the person watching a movie. Souls don't watch movies. So the person is watching a movie, doesn't actually come in contact with the characters in the movie. I mean, actually, they're all illusory anyway. Illusory and temporary. And they're real in one sense. I mean, the film or the video or the electrons that cause the image to appear, it's real. And the actors who made that happen, it's real. But the whole show, as Prabhupada would say, is only temporary. The whole show is just an illusion. So, you're being influenced by that illusion even though you're not in contact with the illusion, right? You're looking at the TV and you're crying or you're feeling anxiety. I remember I was on the airplane and there was some like really action movie. I looked up and looked at it and they were jumping out of cars and, you know, all these action movies nowadays with the special effects, quite interesting. You know, jumping out of cars or jumping through flames or jumping off buildings, you know, superheroes. And when I watched it, my heart started beating really fast. And I just started thinking, get him, you know, got to get that rascal. But the rascal doesn't even exist. It's just all illusion, and I'm not in contact with that. So the soul is basically watching this movie. Just like that example I use in my book, You're Not the Body, in the front of the book, the cover. You have the soul watching the screen, and he's watching what everything happens, because he's not really in contact. I mean, even if you examine the nature of the senses, let's say the sight is receiving its information, some photons or whatever, hitting the lens, and it goes back to the retina, and then through the optic nerve. I mean, it's such an indirect perception of this world that we have. It goes back through the optic nerve, and it switches around in the brain. You know, the left side of the brain is the right eye, and the right side of the brain is the left eye. I mean, it's really interesting how the brain is And then it's actually upside down, but the brain switches it to right side up. And but the brain is not the source of the consciousness either. I mean, many so-called scientists say the brain is the source of consciousness. No, the brain filters the consciousness, one of the material filters, along with the, mind intelligence and false ego. There's the Panchamahabhuta and then the mind intelligence and false ego. So it filters the consciousness, and so it influences the way we perceive things, but it's not the source of the consciousness of the living entity. And even people have these near-death experiences, and they experience when the brain is dead, they're still conscious. The brain actually sometimes stops for minutes, and the person is still remembering things, conscious. So the soul is the source of the consciousness. So what I'm pointing out is it's so indirect, the soul's contact with matter. And not only the brain, but then it's filtered through the mind intelligence, and ultimately the false ego. I mean, false ego means that we see things in terms of I and mine. Like if I'm looking at this, mobile phone and thinking, that's mine, because I'm not going to give it to you. But if I'm thinking it's mine, then my false ego is actually filtering that perception. Not only the mind, but the false ego is filtering. So everything is being filtered like through many different layers. And so it's so indirect, our perception. And of course, the super soul does not actually come in. What to speak of the super soul? The super soul doesn't come in contact with matter. I mean, you can do an open heart surgery and you ain't going to see the soul or super soul. Even though it's talked about, the soul, super soul 8 inches high. Okay, 8 inches is pretty easy to see. I mean, it's 8 inches, like about this big. That's pretty big. Yeah, I mean, the soul is actually 1/10,000 tip of the hair. I can understand why you don't see the soul. But, super soul, he's 8 inches high. Huh? I can see I mean, my eyes aren't that good, as you get older. But 8 inches, I still can see things that are 8 inches, even without my glasses. And, you do open heart surgery. I mean, for example, I hate to mention it, but when I was young, I would do open heart surgery on frogs. Horrible. When Prabhupada was asked about teaching biology, he said, poor frogs. He was asked about, should we teach biology in the Gurukul? And then Prabhupada said, poor frogs. That was his immediate response. Because obviously, in his schooling, they had some interaction with that sort of dissection. Dissection means you take apart the animals to see what's inside. It's really gross. So, I dissected a frog, and it was alive, and I didn't see any super soul. I mean, in a frog, it would be a correspondingly smaller. I mean, obviously, a frog super soul is not going to be 8 inches. The frog itself is just about, the little frogs that I had were about 3 or 4 inches. Super soul bigger than the frog. So I didn't see, because the super soul is transcendentally situated and manifests in appropriate size. Prabhupada said appropriate size according to the size of the living entity. So in other words, getting back to the point, the super soul isn't have his abode in the spirit, in the material world, but he manifests in the material world. I try to get that clear. In fact, it's said that Krishna never even comes in contact with any of his Purusha avatars. Purusha avatars, of course, that means the Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, who's the super soul, never comes in contact with matter. In fact, the only way he comes in contact, or comes in contact, is Aikshita. He glances. He glances at matter. And we mentioned last night in the class that glance is Shambhu, or Shiva, who does come in contact with matter, because matter is his wife. That's Durga. So Krishna doesn't touch the matter. So he lives somewhere else. And he has these various abodes that are mentioned here. There are abodes, of course, in the spiritual realm, the Vaikuntha planets, the topmost, of course, being Goloka Vrindavan. And, of course, the word Vaikuntha means, it's a negative definition, which means without anxiety. So, and then the other abodes of Lord Vishnu, each of which Lord Vishnu manifests, the forearms holding different weapons. They're still the four same weapons, but in different configurations. There's unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And of course, there's planets where Lord Ram is president. There's planets where Lord Vamanadeva is present. Any of these different incarnations. The Lord Prabhupada says in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya that the non-human incarnations of the Lord don't have planets in the spiritual world. Only the human incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still, those incarnations, the non-human incarnations, are eternal because they're continually manifesting within the material world. Like Lord Nrsimhadeva is eternal, Karma, Matsya, Varaha, they're all eternal Nitya Lila pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's the planets in the spiritual world, the Para Vyoma, that means the transcendental sky in Sanskrit. And then, as Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, there's these dhammas in the material world. And dhamma means like an embassy. Prabhupada used that example too. There's an embassy of a particular country, and the rules of that country of which it is an embassy of apply within the embassy. For example, if someone is trying to escape the American government for some reason or other, and they're in America, they can take shelter in the Russian embassy or the Norwegian embassy or any of these embassies that will give them shelter. And this way, the United States government's not really supposed to go in there. I mean, if they want to get that person, they can petition. That's called extradition. Extradition means that if someone is in a different country or under the jurisdiction of a different government, you have to have extradition treaties. That means you have some written agreement whereby if a criminal goes to that country, you know, trying to escape the American legal system, then you can extradite it. And that's happened many times, that different terrorists have been extradited to America, and eventually they go to Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. You know, that's another subject matter. So the Dom is an embassy where the rules of the material world don't apply in the same way. I mean, just like, for example, we were talking about building something in the Holy Dom in Vrindavan. We're building a temple, we're building a school, different things like that in Govardhan. So naturally the question was raised about Vastu. You've heard about Vastu before? You know, Vastu means the rules of placing things within this material world. You know, there's the Vastu Purush. I'm not going to get into the details of Vastu, but you're supposed to have the bathrooms in a particular area, the water in another area, and if the land's not sloped properly, you lose all your money. I remember there was one temple in Sweden, Korsnäs, that they didn't have any money. You know, things were going badly for them. So in order to cure the Vastu, they made a big pile of dirt to keep the money from flowing out. And it worked. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in Vastu, actually, it's a science. It's a science. I mean, it's the whole Vastu Shastra. It's more recent, of course, than the spiritual Shastras, but still, there's a science, like Ayurveda and astrology. There's a science. Because there's things that happen. There's different currents, energies that are flowing in the material world. Like Prabhupada even said, you know, when you sleep, you should have your head towards the east, right? You know, so if they're not different currents, why would Prabhupada say that? Prabhupada was aware of these different interactions, different energies in the material world. So I was asking about Vastu, and so far as Govardhan is concerned, they said, well, Vastu doesn't apply here. The spiritual world. I said, huh? Okay. Of course, you still have to build nicely or else the building collapses. You know, there's certain things that do apply. It's not that. Of course, in India, the general laws don't apply. You just have to bribe, but that's a different subject matter. But that's all of India, not only the holy places. So, the holy places, it's different. However, you know, Prabhupada comments here. I found this quite interesting. That the demons, are not there. There is no influence from Kali Yuga or any other demon. Well, I've been to Vrindavan, and there's, you know, a lot of things happening there that are apparently Kali Yuga. I mean, you got these skyscrapers. Now, Vrindavan is no longer the place it used to be. When I first went to Vrindavan in 1972 or something, there were peacocks in Vrindavan, and the Parikrama path was really beautiful. It's all sand, you walk, there's no honking, no even bicycle rickshaws. It was just like so peaceful. You circumambulate Vrindavan and you just think of Krishna. Nowadays, they paved over paradise, so to speak. You got these humongous buildings. Even one organization that used to be associated with ISKCON is building this temple bigger than the temple of Vedic Planetarium in Vrindavan, taller. I guess it's really ostentatious. Whatever. So you see all these things, the honking of the horns, the pollution, the plastic bags. I mean, that's Kali Yuga, you know, plastic bags. You never hear about Krishna and the cowboys throwing their plastic bags in the Jamuna. Life was very simple. It was a rustic and rural life at that particular point. So what is this? If Vrindavan or the Holy Dham is not, you know, there's no demons, and certainly devotees get attacked in different ways. You know, there's actually violence sometimes. So what does it mean? Well, actually, what we're seeing when we go to Vrindavan, at least most of us see, is the veneer of Yogamaya. As Krishna says in Gita, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha, Yogamaya Samavrata. For those who were, you know, basically rascals, Mudayam Navijananti, for those who are actually rascals, I cover myself by this Yogamaya. So himself means his dham, which is non-different from Krishna. So they people go there and they just see, you know, the dirt, the pigs, the crazy things that are apparently going on. And they don't see the real Vrindavan. They don't enter into the real Vrindavan. Because to enter into the real Vrindavan, this is like to see Krishna. Let's talk about the Brahma Samhita for a second. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Shantak Shadaiva Vidyesha Vilokiyamti. You have to have eyes tinged with the salve of love of God. Atakshi Krishna Namami Nabhavat Ve Grayam Indriyat. What is that? That verse says, Atakshi Krishna Namadi, Navavet Grayam Indriya. So you can't, with these senses, you can't actually perceive Krishna or the Holy Dham. But Seva Mukehi Jivado, Vaimevas Pravachada, by rendering service. I was also listening to a class that Prabhupada was talking about the other day, you know, criticizing those who just want to sit down like Babaji's and chant. And Prabhupada said that, you know, service is the point. You know, seva, service. And of course, service to the mission, service to the pure devotee. This is the actual point. Of course, the chanting has to go on. But Prabhupada, in his Vrindavan Bhajan, he severely criticizes those who just go to Vrindavan and sit down and chant. He says, they're eating the mind's bananas, is the Prabhupada's expression. I mean, that's a really heavy statement, really heavy criticism. I mean, if you say to someone, you're just bananas, that means you're crazy. So if you say you're eating your mind's bananas, I mean, that's it's so poetic. I mean, Prabhupada is the best poet. You know, so he makes this really interesting. So you just picture someone eating their mind's bananas, whatever it is. And it's just a huh. In other words, they're just an illusion, thinking that they're becoming Krishna conscious, because the Dham for them is covered. And then many people are associating with those who criticize Vaishnavas and think that that's devotional service in the Dham. You know, people go to Radha Kund and then they hear from those who denigrate Prabhupada in our disciplic succession and denigrate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they think that's devotional service. I mean, we shouldn't denigrate anybody. Even the people who denigrate us, we shouldn't denigrate them. We shouldn't criticize them. But we can criticize what they say. you know, like Prabhupada said, you know, don't criticize. If you touch a skunk, you'll start to smell. So when you criticize something, you should criticize their philosophy. Like Prabhupada would say, what's their philosophy? What do they say? And then Prabhupada would criticize the philosophy. And people think that criticism of Vaishnavas is devotional service, or denigration of Vaishnavas, devotional in the holy Dham. And the problem with that is when you're there in the location, even though you haven't entered, you know, in your mind into the holy Dham, you're committing offenses, and those offenses are 1,000 times worse than offenses you could commit anywhere else. And that's pretty bad. I mean, you get 1,000 times more benefit from being in the holy Dham by doing devotional service, and you also get 1,000 times more detriment, you know, or problems when you commit offenses. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about just remaining in the holy Dham for a fortnight. And even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when this devotee Jagannanda Pandit was going to Vrindavan, he said, just stay there a short time and always stay with Sanatana Goswami. And don't criticize the Rajavasana, because they're on a different level than you. It was interesting. I mean, Jagannanda Pandit's on the highest level, but obviously, you know, he's definitely on the highest planet level. However, because he's like Satchabhama. So, however, Lord Chaitanya was teaching through his interactions with Jagannanda Pandit that one has to be very careful in the holy Dham. Don't criticize the Brajabasi, don't criticize the rickshaw wallows. I mean, you can bargain with them and argue with them about the price, which is all right. But don't denigrate them, don't get angry with them. Just be happy. I mean, even when people attack you for a donation, which happens all the time, especially when we take groups, so then you just tolerate. Because we get angry, you know, it's very, very dangerous in the holy Dham. So the holy Dhams are very important. Of course, Prabhupada does say, and of course the Bhagavatam says, Yatirtha Buddhi Shalanay Karijit Janeshu Abhigeshu Sleva Gokura. That when one goes to a holy place, if one simply goes there just to take a bath and doesn't go there to really derive the most important benediction or benefit, then he's no more than a cowardess. That's the Bhagavatam states that. Saiva Gokura. He's no more than a cowardess. So to go to a holy Dham, then we should take advantage to hear about Krishna there. And Prabhupada even said that even if you just stay in Krishna Balaram Mandir and don't, you know, go out and perform it, he said everything is contained within Krishna Balaram Mandir. So, I mean, of course, we like parikrama, we take the devotees on parikrama, but, you know, but if one just hears about Krishna, then one gets all the benefit. I mean, it's like even when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, in Braj, with his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and the devotees were going out on this pilgrimage to see the Shira Dakshay Vishnu, which I've seen, a very nice deity. There's the Shira Sagara right next to the temple. Anyone's been there? Anyone been on Brajamandal pilgrimage? None of you. Anyway, there's this temple where they have this deity of Lord Vishnu lying down, and Lord Brahma is coming from his navel, and all the demigods are around him, praying to him. It's a beautiful deity. I think I even have a picture in one of my slideshows. And right next to it is the Shira Sagara, I mean, it's the ocean, or there's a lake, which is the lake of Shira, you know, condensed milk. Of course, you don't see that because you don't have the right consciousness, but it's there. So when we went there, we took a little of the water. So there was an announcement when Prabhupada was with the spiritual master that this is what's going to be happening today or tonight. And you can all go and enjoy yourselves, and those who want to stay back can stay back and be with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but Prabhupada stayed back. Because he understood. He was thinking, you know, what can I see with these eyes? Of course, Prabhupada has spiritual vision. He can see everything. But he understood the point that one associates with a great devotee, that's the highest benefit. He hears Shushu Shro Shradananasa Vasudeva Katha Ritri Shan Mahat Sevya Vipra Punya Tirthana Shevana. It's actually the best service to hear. Hearing. Because when you hear, you act. If you hear with faith, then you act. I mean, hearing, it doesn't mean you sit down and just hear all day long. You know, the Prabhupada says, do something. He said, no, I'm just hearing from you, Prabhupada. I want to hear how I'm supposed to do something, but I'm not going to do anything. That's not hearing. That's just like in one ear, out another. There's an empty space between the two ears. So, and of course, the dhams, the holy dhams, just talking about the holy dhams again, they have different moods. You know, you have Vrindavan, which is Madhuryadam. Madhuryadam means very sweet, but it's also very strict dham. You know, very, very strict. You really have to behave, because who's in charge there? Srimati Radharani. And she is extremely strict with how people deal with Krishna. You know, if you're, like, we're serving Radha and Krishna on the altar, so if you don't cook with the right consciousness or cleanliness or whatever, she's not going to let Krishna take it. Because she's cooking for Krishna in the kitchen. Radharani is actually in the kitchen cooking. It's described, about Lord Chaitanya's associates when they would cook for Lord Chaitanya. And then Radharani would cook in the kitchen so that Lord Chaitanya would be able to take proper food. Anyway, so Vrindavan's Madhuryadam, very, very sweet, but you have to be extremely careful committing offenses. And Mayapur's Odaryadam. Odarya means like very merciful. I mean, not that you should go and commit offenses. Oh, Lord Chaitanya is very merciful. Let me offend all the Vaishnavas there. But very, very merciful. So you're forgiven for so many offenses. And by going to Mayapur, and of course also by chanting the Panchatattva Mahamantra before we chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. That's why we do that. Not that we should chant rounds of the Panchatattva Mahamantra. Some devotees do that. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, you know, on the beach. That's not what Prabhupada prescribed. You have to chant according to the way Prabhupada prescribed. Anyway, so Mayapur Dham and Vrindavan Dham. And just wanted to mention, of course, then we have New Goloka Dham. And this is also, these are not eternal dhams or tirthas. Of course, we've mentioned many times before, the tirtha means like a crossing place where you can cross to the spiritual world, like a portal in the science fiction films. So these are not eternal, but they have the potency of the holy dham. You know, we're here in the temple and we can experience, you know, the presence of Krishna. It's the same Krishna, Sakshat Vajendra Nandana, who's on the altar. It's not a different Krishna than Radhasham Shunda. Same, absolutely 100% the same. And Krishna reveals himself here, but he doesn't bring Vrindavan according to your degree of devotion. And if you have that devotion, Krishna will reveal, you'll see the deities as Krishna. The deities are, you know, Krishna and Radharani, but you don't perceive that right now. You know, according to your degree of surrender and devotion and dedication, you perceive things in the right way. And if you're in Maya, you just like don't see anything. Like when I first came to a temple, you know, I was in Maya the first time I walked into Hare Krishna temple. I didn't know which side of the temple was the altar. Basically, I didn't know what was on the altar. I mean, my mother, she came into the temple and saw the deities, and she said, your father should be on the altar instead of Krishna. That was her response. You know, she just got upset. I had made a mistake. I brought her in to see the deities. I was thinking, she sees the deities, she'll be ecstatic, start dancing, become a devotee, it didn't happen. Eventually. It will, but so it depends on one's approach, one's consciousness. Anyway, so this is some statements about the holy dham. Krishna lives in the holy dham. Galoka eva nivasati akilatma bhuta. Krishna is everywhere through his energy. He manifests his presence as the super soul everywhere in every atom, but he remains in the spiritual abode. Galoka eva nivasati. He never leaves Galoka Vrindavan. So on that happy note, confirmed. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Radhagalokananda. Radhagalokananda ki jai, Gaur Prabhupada, Hari Hari.